This is the Leonard LoPage Show on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart filling in for Leonard. Bedlam Theater is known for its pared-down, incisive productions of classics like Hamlet, St. Joan, and Sense and Sensibility, which managed to capture the essence of those familiar dramas with a small cast and bare stage. Bedlam's Peter Pan, however, defies expectations. Most versions of the play highlight pirates, fairies, and flying. The Bedlam version is about sex, death, and anxiety. Sarah Holdren in New York Magazine says the old terrain has become terra incognita, and its strangeness is wonderful to experience. Bedlam's Peter Pan is at the Duke on 42nd Street until December 23rd. Joining me today here in the studio are Brad Heberle, who plays both Peter and Nana the dog, and Kelly Curran, who plays Wendy. Welcome both.
Thank you so much.
Sex, death, and anxiety. This is kind of a dark... When I think Peter Pan, those are not the three things I think of.
It's been an interesting revelation for us about the play, actually, because I think, you know, as a society, over the last century, we've seen so many versions of this story, the Disney version, the Mary Martin musical, and... It's sort of been co-opted in so many ways and changed in so many ways. And when we went back as a company to the original 1904 J.M. Barrie text, which is what our source material, what we're using, we were astonished, I think, at the adult nature of the text and the themes and the darknesses that were revealed just in reading it. And so that's what our artistic director and the director of the play and also an actor in the play, Eric Tucker, decided he wanted to focus on in this version.
Yeah, and really highlight. I mean, I think what's funny is that all the wonder and innocence and sense of adventure, of course, that we all know that exists in Peter Pan is still there. But I would say that the undercurrent of desire and budding sexuality is also in the text. And we just really, as six adults approaching this play, we leave ourselves in the equation so that as adults, we can really foreground that and explore that something that I think already exists in the play.
Now, Barrie wrote both a play and a novel about Peter Pan, didn't he?
Yes, he did. The play was his first work in 1904. Yeah. And then the novel he wrote and published in 1911. And I think the interesting thing there is, one of the many interesting things, is that he changed the title when he wrote the novel. The play was called Peter Pan, A Fantasy in Five Acts, and the novel is titled Peter and Wendy, which to me speaks also to our production to a certain extent of how much of the story is about their relationship.
All right, I want to talk about their relationship, but we just have to get something out on the table right away. Just to be clear, folks, this production, well, Bedlam is not a kids' theater company.
No.
No.
And it's pretty much fair to say that this production is not aimed at children.
No.
No.
And I think people get that just given what we've said already and the idea that the name of the play was Peter and Wendy.
The name of the novel was Peter and Wendy.
Was Peter and Wendy. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about their relationship, since Bedlam's Peter Pan is hewing more closely to the original text. What is it about their relationship?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think initially we first started exploring, I mean, I can't speak for Kelly, but I think on my end as Peter, exploring a sense of, power, you know, looking for ways that would serve, you know, my sense of adventure and what she has to offer me, whether it's maternal, whether it's... platonic, and whether it's sexual, and using those things that I see in her to my advantage. So, you know, which is very selfish, but of course people are very selfish.
You know, but humans.
Right, right. We're absolutely very human. And I think a really interesting thing that started to come out for me in this play was that the real tension between responsibility versus the sort of recklessness of adventure. And when you choose to leave your home and explore something new and discover something new. And I think Peter has that appeal for her, is that he's offering to take her into a place that's completely unknown, and she's a young woman with limited experience, and that's such an exciting possibility for her.
A young woman with limited experience. Okay, so don't you both come looking for, let's talk about shadow, because since we're talking about possibilities and sex is a part of this. Yeah. And let's talk about shadow and what shadow stands for, represents in this production, and how it is performed on this stage.
Oh, I love that question. Yeah. Well, you know, Peter, obviously he returns to the Darling household to literally find his shadow. But in our production, the shadow is, you know, represents, really, it's kind of, the director left it up to me to personalize that. And it can be, you know, it changes over time, but it's the part of myself that maybe I don't want to look at, the part of myself that it's hard to reconcile, or the part of myself that's like my mojo. But I've come back to the Darling house to find that. And Wendy is right there to kind of, I guess, you know, get on board with my world, and she helps facilitate, you know,
getting on board. I think is what you're talking about.
Yes, she definitely.
Right,
well, there's an interesting exchange between the two of them in the text, where when she first meets him, one of the first things she finds out about him is that he says, "Don't touch me," and she says, "Why?" And he says, "No one can ever touch me," and she says, "Why?" And he says, "I don't know." And then I think in our particular production, it became this interesting challenge then of like, how can I cure this? How can I find my way into this person who doesn't want to be touched, who doesn't want to be held accountable to other people? And I think my take on when she takes that on as a challenge, and in terms of fixing his problem of getting his shadow reattached, she kind of takes that on very literally.
Yes, because the reattachment process is very sexual. Just for the audience to know, I'm speaking with Brad Heberle and Kelly Curran about Bedlam's Peter Pan. I just want to make it clear, we are talking about a production that's at the Duke on 42nd Street until December 23rd, and that this is not your Peter Pan. This is not your parents' Peter Pan. This is a very grown-up Peter Pan. A couple of things I want to talk about. One, who had the idea for Tinkerbell to speak French? And how is she different than any Tinkerbell we've seen?
Yes, well, that was actually the idea of the actress who portrays her, Susanna Milanzi, who is a founding member of the company. And she... you know, we had a whole conversation about the fairy language. J.M. Barrie refers to Tinkerbell and the fairy language and who can understand it and who can't. And Peter clearly can. The Lost Boys clearly can. But Wendy can't. It's very clear. She always has to ask Peter, what did she say? What did she say? And we were trying to come up with different, what could that mean for a person that's playing Tinkerbell as opposed to a light? Well, often in theatrical productions, Tinkerbell is just depicted with a moving light, a technical thing. And so now that there was this fully fleshed human being portraying Tinkerbell, what is that? And Susanna just started playing around with a few different things, and French came up, and it became such a fun and delightful thing to play with, and that attitude and that language, that it just kind of stuck.
And French, I mean, everyone thinks of French as the language of love, so it's just
That's correct.
Perfect.
Yeah, and Eric Tucker, the director, he likes to grow things from the company of actors that he's working with, and so Susanna, she speaks French, or had certainly studied French for a long time, so... You know, because that was something she offered in the room, he wanted to grow that from her, because then, you know, when you have ownership of something as an actor, you can really fly with it. You can really run with it. And it was really working, and it gave her a whole persona, and she has a cigarette, and it created this whole other kind of color for certainly Peter, too, this other part of his life that emerged in his relationships with other women.
And just on this technical point about Susanna and speaking French, and is it also just from an acting perspective, if you speak, she speaks French, this comes from a very natural place. She doesn't really have to act. She doesn't have to figure out how to do it. She knows how to do that. Is that a good way to look at it?
She had to, I mean, we had to figure out the specifics of kind of like the arc of our arguments and things like that. So she had to work on finding language that was appropriate and that told the story. But yeah, of course, she's on stage and, you know, I honestly don't really know what she's saying. But that's where the acting comes in. I kind of pretend I know what she's saying and respond accordingly.
Yeah, and I'm lucky enough to not supposed to know what she's saying, it works out for me.
A couple of things you brought up, like Tinkerbell in past productions, it's a light, mm-hmm. you know, technologically speaking, and you just a minute ago talked about, you know, an actor, Susanna, being able to, you know, fly away, run away with something. Flying figures prominently in the story of Peter Pan, but in this production, y'all aren't flying.
Well,
so how do you? So
now,
how do
hold
you
on, hold on. I mean, we're flying in our own special way, metaphorically speaking. But look, we worked on flying for a long time because, actually flying, as you would recognize in any, you know, musical of Peter Pan or production of Peter Pan on cables, flying around the room was never going to be, you know, part of the way we realized that. So we had a real challenge before us. And so we worked on it for a long time.
And many different iterations.
Such as certainly movement. And there was a time all of us, you know, were in the room balancing on one leg until we got bored to tears.
Yeah. There was a time when we shut off all the lights and just made the sounds of what would the effort of flying be like. Yeah, and so the whole scene was done in the dark.
It was like an aural landscape.
So it was, there was a lot of like.
That's what flying's supposed to sound like. That's what our flying was like.
Okay. But eventually we
actually returned to some of the text of the Samuel French edition of the script, which is written on sort of like one of the front pages of the script, all about this company, Peter Foy and Foy Theatricals, I think they're called. And
based
how,
in Las Vegas.
Yeah, based in Las Vegas, Nevada.
My hometown.
From Vegas.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And there's this great line where it says, you know, the technical challenges of flying shouldn't discourage anyone from producing this delightful production. And we were finding it so hard of how do you produce this play without the literal flying, which is a very costly thing in the theater for the number of actors who had to do it. And this is like a young not-for-profit company that's only celebrating their 50th year now, but a small off-Broadway company. And so how do we tackle that with the resources we have? And so we started to find that text kind of helped us. The great thing about this company is whenever we come up with a challenge, you always go back to the text, whether it's the text written before the play even begins in the Samuel French, the publisher's notes, or the play itself. And so that was sort of the, I think, surprising way that we figured out how we could solve this problem of flying without flying equipment.
without the flying equipment. All right, so before we go, we have to talk about part of the story of Peter Pan is this growing up, or like not wanting to grow up. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering for each of you personally, what have you learned about yourself and the process of growing up? Has it changed? Do you not consider yourself grown up? I can tell you right now, I still feel like that 13-year-old kid.
I haven't grown up, and yet
I'm a grown up.
Well, that's why it's complex. Yes. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, certainly, like, and Peter and Wendy, of course, have the, you know, Peter's the one who doesn't want to grow up, and Wendy has her lessons. But I think for me, like, it's really, you know, I'm very reflective about that because, of course, there's parts of ourselves that have a really difficult time with the responsibilities of adulthood and, mm-hmm. you know, having to take responsibility for your actions in every situation. Because I think at times it's lovely, like in the play, I guess I will speak for Wendy, is like, mm-hmm. it seems like it's nice to become an object in someone's narrative for a while and be carried along by it until there's the cost to it, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to, you have to let go and return home and, you know, make hard decisions. And so, I don't know, it just, the play has me really thinking about things like that in my own life, and but in a wonderful way, you know, that that I can learn from personally.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. I think that's why we keep coming back to this story over and over in all these forms. And there's this sort of cultural obsession with Peter Pan. And and I always think of why. And I think, because wouldn't that be so liberating if you didn't have to grow up, if you didn't have to have your responsibilities to work, to your family, to other people? There's such freedom in that, but there's also such a cost in that. And there's a beautiful coda that J.M. Barrie wrote that is the final scene of the play, and it's the final scene of our play, so I won't talk about it too much, but you see Peter and Wendy on these divergent paths of Peter staying where he is and Wendy deciding that she has to grow up. And it's sort of a beautiful scene that is often cut out of so many versions of this play, and it's really my favorite part of the night of our production, to arrive at that moment and find these two characters who have this choice to make, and to see one go in one direction and one go in the other. And I love that.
There's so much we could talk about this production that I didn't even get to, because we've focused on other things. And this ends on the 23rd. What's going to happen? What are you doing after the 23rd?
Well, after the 23rd, I'm going to be starting a new play at Paper Mill Playhouse called The Outsider, a political satire written by Paul Slade Smith, which I'm very excited about. Totally different genre, totally different company.
No flying.
And I get to play a reporter, so maybe I'll pick your brain.
Oh,
maybe I'll,
okay.
Maybe I'll come
it's
back
a
and
very
talk.
Easy job.
Excellent, excellent. No doubt.
And I will be going to see Kelly in those plays because I am totally available.
And on that note, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm Jonathan Capehart. In today for Leonard Lopate, I've been speaking with Kelly Curran and Brad Heberle, who are starring as Wendy and Peter in the Bedlam production of Peter Pan. As we just said, Peter Pan runs through Saturday, December 23rd, playing at The Duke. That's at 229 West 42nd Street. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you so Thank much, you so Jonathan.
Coming up, Please Explain is all about the mind of dogs. This is WNYC and WNYC.org, and we're also available as a podcast.